Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
The Volume.
This is Boxing with Chris Manning.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back. Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network, Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. Jake Donovan, the senior writer with BoxingScene.com, will join me in a minute. A little bit later on, Jarrell Miller, the former heavyweight contender who was on the comeback trail after his career was derailed following multiple positive drug tests. He'll join me. As always, subscribe, rate, and review this pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. All right. So I was in San Antonio last weekend for Bam Rodriguez's title-winning performance against Christian Gonzalez. A few rows behind me was Jake Donovan, and Jake joins me now on the show. Jake, I want to get into what we saw from Bam, who apparently fought through the second half of the fight with a broken jaw, which is pretty damn impressive. Some other news, Anthony Joshua in the news as well. But I want to begin this show with Shakur Stevenson, who had a spectacular debut at 135 pounds, picking up a knockout win over a previously undefeated fighter. Just brilliant from Shakur Stevenson, who continues to, look the part of a top pound-for-pound level fighter. So let me ask you this. Yoshino, who Stevenson beat, not a elite contender, top 10 ranked with the WBC, but not an elite guy. Still, Shakur Stevenson made pretty short work of him and showed again that he's not just a defensive-minded guy, that he's not just a guy content to win decisions. He is willing to stand in the pocket, trade punches, and or at least throw punches, and beat you in a physical way. So, what did you make of the latest performance by Shakur?
You know, I love the fact that he wasn't even completely satisfied with it. That, yes, he got the stoppage win. He beat a guy who was undefeated. I don't even know if Yoshino had been down prior to that fight. But Shakur even agreed that the stoppage was a little too soon. He wanted to emphatically knock him out. But I love the fact that he went in and he absolutely made a statement at lightweight. So he ditched that image. It's not going to be a safety first, performance. I know he got a lot of criticism with the Nakatilo performance where he admitted, he felt his power and he didn't want to take any risks. This one, he just didn't care. He wanted to go in, blow this guy out and let everybody know, this was his mission to go this route. He wanted to challenge me down in the Undisputed Championship. He felt he's already with Top Ranks. He feel like he's going to get the shot, but he's going to double down, become the WBC mandatory, let the world know he's going to be the next WBC lightweight, the next lightweight champion in the world. And he made that statement emphatically. I've always been pretty big on Yoshino. He obviously has a ceiling. I never thought he was going to beat Shakur. I thought he would give him more of a test, though. He is a tough guy. In retrospect, it's easy to say, Ito is past prime and Nakatani, he is who he is. But he's still beating an undefeated guy. Maybe you look back and say, well, what if he got to Jermaine Ortiz? Maybe that would have been a tougher test. And that could still be in the way if he can't get straight to a title shot. But I felt like we did see everything we needed to see out of Shakur. At 130, I thought it wasn't as smooth of a transition, like from featherweight you know, it was like, okay, you know, when are we going to see the best come out of Shakur? I think we're at that point. We're seeing him start to hit his optimal run.
Yeah, and at some point, we're going to have to start talking about Shakur Stevenson as a top five pound-for-pound guy, absolutely, a top three pound-for-pound guy. Obviously, resume has a lot to do with that, but he goes to 130, and he beats the bejesus out of Jamel Herring, you know, wipes out Oscar Valdez. These are legitimate guys, title holders in that weight class, and Shakur Stevenson is beating them with relative ease. I mean, how many more fights, how many more wins before we start talking about Shakur in that kind of rarefied air that we put Terrence Crawford, we put Alexander Usyk, we put Noyoya Inoue? How far away do you think he is?
I think at least maybe one more fight. I'm not going to say at least one more fight. I'm going to say his next fight, especially if it's the winner of Haney and Lomachenko. I know it's more so if Lomachenko wins, he's going to stay at lightweight. If Haney wins, there's a question, can he continue to make lightweight? So I'd have to imagine whatever payday would be at stake for a fight like that, that would incentivize Devin to, you know, boil down to 135 one more time. But yeah, I love the fact, yeah, if he can get to Lomachenko, that's a pound-for-pound introduction for sure. If he's not there, I'm with you. He should be at least in the top 10, and he is starting to creep towards that top five. I mean, pound-for-pound is as much about the eye test as it is about, you know, who's on your resume. He's got the wins, as you mentioned, and he definitely passes the eye test. So, you know, more performances like this, absolutely. I mean, he's the guy. A couple of years ago, we were saying this is a future pound-for-pound king. He's getting pretty close, like two, three, you know, big wins away from claiming that mantle.
Yeah, Olympic silver medalist, two division world champion, beating top guys in the weight classes that he's in. I'd love to see him in against Haney. I'm not sure that's the most aesthetically pleasing fight, quite frankly. Right. Like punches landed might be in the single digits because both those guys are brilliant skill-wise. You know, I know that was in the water supply after Shakur's win that Haney would stick around at 135 to fight him, but I don't know about you, but I don't buy that. I think Devin, unless the money is astronomical, and it's just not going to be because that's a fight for the purists right now. It's not as big a mainstream fight as it could be in a year and a half when these two guys mature and get even more exposure, more quality wins. I don't think Haney's coming back to 135 after Lomachenko. Lomachenko's staying where he is, though, and I think Lomachenko absolutely would take a fight against Shakur Stevenson later in the year, and that could potentially be his king-making performance. But I don't know where you stand on Haney. I feel like this is the swan song for Devin Haney at 135, win or lose against Lomachenko.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I believe they both said it in the past that they do believe they're going to fight each other, but that it would get to a point where they just stop growing and they're finally going to meet in the same weight division. I mean, yes, right now they're in the same weight division, but Shakur's just entering. Devin Haney, we both believe he's on his way. You know, this is going to be it. He's getting a lot of money for the Lomachenko fight, so that's worth it. But he'll go up to 140, probably catch a belt there. Shakur will eventually grow into 140. I do believe they'll meet there. So I totally believe him on that. The only fight I believe that would keep Haney at 135 is, and I don't believe it would happen, is the winner of Tank and Ryan Garcia, which, you know, I think you and I disagree on that, but I'm going to say Tank because that's, it's a massive payday. But if Ryan wins, that becomes, you know, he becomes, you know, the cash cow in the division. But either way, that's the type of money. It's like, all right, you know, maybe now I could stick around or whatever catch weight you can do. But other than that, I do believe Devin Haney will be going on to junior welterweight after this.
Well, if Ryan wins, it becomes an easy fight to make at 140 because Ryan's not sticking around at 136 or whatever catchweight would be a rematch. And that's, you know, marketability-wise, that's an even bigger fight because Ryan would be the biggest star in and around that weight class at that point. Yeah, the Shakur fight, I hate to see things marinate because I hate that word and I hate that, you know, things can happen along the way. But 140 feels like the weight class where these two guys should be. Devin's on his way there. And Shakur, he's a big guy. Like, he's a growing guy. Like, you know, I could see him fighting Lomachenko, maybe collecting, if Lomachenko doesn't have the belts, maybe collecting one or two more, you know, getting some of the bigger fights at 135, but then up to 140, where a lot of marketable fights are potentially waiting, not just Devin Haney. All right. Bam Rodriguez this past weekend drops down to 112 pounds. Fights a little known guy. Christian Gonzalez didn't have much of a name, much of a resume, put up a good fight, came into the fight in pretty good shape, and even went as far as breaking Bam's jaw in the middle of that fight. We've seen some guys, Jake, who have taken a broken jaw and quit, frankly. Right. And listening to Bam Rodriguez briefly after the fight and looking at him eye to eye in the ring, that jaw was fucked up. That jaw was legitimately crooked, and you could see kind of the anguish in his eyes as I asked him a couple of questions to wrap that thing up. But if that injury really did happen in the sixth round, that makes that win all that more impressive. I mean, I give Gonzalez credit, not just for avoiding getting knocked out, but I thought he had his moments at times in that fight. You know, he stood and traded in the 12th round. I would have liked to have seen him done that a little bit earlier because he was clearly way down on the scorecards. And, you know, if you got to give yourself a chance to at least win, you might want to sit down your punches a little bit more and see what you can do. But Gonzalez was fine. And for Bam to go through that those last six rounds and keep coming forward, like he was not fighting off his back foot. He was not fighting defensively. He was the aggressor in the second half of the fight with a broken jaw. That made that win infinitely more impressive to me that Bam was able to do that. What did you think of Bam's sort of debut at 112 pounds?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's like, you know, watching, you know, we were a little further, you had the true ringside view. We had the further back ringside view. But just sitting back there, it's like, oh, okay, you know, this is going to go 12. It's maybe on par with his fight with Israel Gonzalez. I'm sorry, his last one. I thought he's a little bit better in this one. But yeah, just hearing him talk, it just speaks to his humility as well. Because we all love Bam. He's as humble as they come, him and Joshua Franco both. My greatest image of Fight Week was like the pre-fight press conference. He was the first one there. He and Robert Garcia standing outside at 12:05. It's like they beat me there. That's just the type of guy he is. It's like he's always there to please his fans. He's, you know, just as humble as they come. And then in the ring, he always wants to give his best account of himself. So there was absolutely no quit in him. And like you said, you know, an injury like that, we would have forgiven him. It's like his fans would have been pissed off. But then when you saw him, you're like, okay, now we get it. You know, there could have been no way he continues. So I don't know how he did it for six rounds. And then to even give you, you know, the two or three questions that, you know, you tried to get him out of there as quickly as possible, but he gave you that time too. It just speaks to who Bam Rodriguez is, just incredible character. So it was a good performance, not great performance, but understandable given the circumstances. To your point on Gonzalez, I actually rode back to the hotel with Tutico Zabala, Gonzalez's promoter. I said, I felt like, you know, his stock went up, but to your point, he didn't give himself the best chance of winning. He kind of like, okay, I can go 12 rounds. He showed that he had a pretty good chin because anytime Bam tagged him, you know, he didn't go anywhere. But I felt like he just didn't give himself that chance to, I don't know if he was going to win, but he could have made it a more competitive fight, or maybe that would have put him in a position where Bam could have looked spectacular. So it was a good introduction to what Bam can do at 112. Certainly a lot better to come once he gets healthy, but it's a pretty tough division. You know, Matchroom just signed Sonny Edwards. I was very surprised that Eddie said right out the gate that, you know, the first unification bout was going to be Bam versus Sonny. You know, it's like, you know, March Madness just ended. You think in Final Four, you want your best two guys to kind of be in the end. So it's like, why would you match them up first? Maybe you're trying to get, you know, Julio Cesar Martinez to the finish line, but it seems like Bam's going to have to now sit out. If they want to get Sonny in the ring, he's either going to fight Julio Cesar Martinez or Dalakian first, because you can't keep him inactive just to hold him for Bam. So I do believe Bam will get right back into the mix, though. I don't think he's going to want to tune up when he comes back. But I liked what I saw. I mean, 115, he had the bigger names, and he had the, you know, he was going for the Fab Four there. He had 3 and 4 as far as the Fab Four, but he went 4, then 3. He beat Cuadras. He beat Sorungvisa. He never quite got to Estrada and Chocolatito. He's talking about getting back to Estrada, but he's going to stay at 112 for now. So I do believe we're going to see those fights. It's just the timeline obviously gets slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, I think Estrada's promoter was there on Saturday, and he was telling Eddie Hearn, like, let's make the fight with Bam next. I don't think that's obviously not going to happen now, because Bam's probably going to miss at least several months after having surgery this week. But that might even turn out to be a good thing, because, you know, Bam and Sonny Edwards is another good fight for the purists, right? But nobody in the U.S. knows who Sonny Edwards is. Simple as that. You put him in with Julio Cesar Martinez in the summertime. Yeah. And look, I think Sonny Edwards probably wins that fight. I think he's the more talented fighter, but Julio Cesar Martinez will make it a fight, and he'll at least make it aesthetically appealing, which is, can't always say that about Sonny Edwards fights. And then you'll have a bigger name for Sonny Edwards. Maybe you can increase the size of the venue that you go to in November, December, whether it is AT&T in San Antonio, somewhere else. So maybe it will work out in the end. But yeah, I was impressed with Bam at 112. I think a opponent who was in poor shape, who didn't move quite as well as Gonzalez, would have gotten knocked out. I think Bam was that strong at 112. And it's kind of a credit to Gonzalez for being in that kind of shape. But again, he didn't do anything to really try to win besides counterpunch and throw kind of arm punches most of the fight. We were talking about that in the broadcast. Like, he's just kind of like throwing, leading with his arm, not his body. So he's not getting much into those shots. And it's really hard to win that way. That's for sure. last thing from last weekend. Sebastian Fedora got knocked out, man. Yeah. Knocked out in a title or an interim title defense. Fedora goes down, just a concussive shot that puts Fedora down and out. I guess start there. Like, what happens to Fedora after this? Like, to me, Jake, this was kind of only a matter of time because Fedora is like 6'6" and fights like someone 5'10". He fights like Brian Castaño fights at 154. Like, never, ever has used his height and reach to his advantage, and he got absolutely tagged in that fight. Yeah. So what happens there? Does he go into a rematch? Does he stay at 154? What do you think's next for Fedora?
So it just depends on, like, where his head is going to be. I mean, once you get, you know, tagged like that, you don't know how you're going to come back in the next fight. And I think we could both agree. It's like, it has been, you know, it's like the way he fights, it's like you were expecting it. I kind of would have expected it in the Lubin fight. Like, I know he officially got knocked down, but there was never the threat of getting to that point. And then, you know, he did what he did in that incredible fight. But I was more surprised that Mendoza was able to do it than Lubin wasn't able to do it last year. And especially in a fight where up until that point, it kind of went the way a lot of people expected. It's like, I found it weird that Jim Gray asked, you know, Fedora after the fight, do you regret taking this? Like, Fedora, he's the type, he is willing to fight everybody. And he was up at least 5-1, if not 6-0 going. So I think anyone who picked Fedora to win probably saw the fight going pretty much how they expected it.
Plus, what's Fedora going to do? Like, he's not going to get a title shot for like another year, probably.
Exactly.
Like, you know, whenever Jermell Charlo comes back, it's going to be Tim Zhu first. Then it's the IBF title defense. Like, he's got to fight. And sitting around waiting is not going to be good for anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know why that type of mentality would be discouraged. And PBC, like, they've been doing this for years with all their 154 pounders. So this shouldn't have been of any surprise. So it's like, you know, maybe give Mendoza more credit. Like, he's resurrected his career and all in that fight, too, because he was, you know, had to come back from where he was in his career to get to this point to be a spoiler and then come back after being down 5-1 and 6-0 to get to that point to knock out Fedora. So that's, I mean, the leading knockout of the year contender. And he, you know, he gets to name his price for his next fight. So I think the pride in Fedora would maybe want to go fight Mendoza again. And like you said, he has time on his side. He's still young. Charlo has, you know, still has several mandatories ahead of him. I know Mendoza can get a title fight. I don't think he's going to jump the line. The only thing I'm thinking with Mendoza is maybe he goes fights Tim Zhu next, because, you know, Tim Zhu saying he doesn't want to wait for Charlo. So he wants another stay busy fight. He was talking about Liam Smith. If Liam Smith can't do it, you know, Mendoza is absolutely going to want it. I don't know if anybody else is going to be in as much of a hurry to fight Mendoza, because, like, he got the last minute call to fight Rosario. Rosario paid the price dearly last year. So he got the call, full training camp to fight Fedora here. You know, he trains under Ismael Salas. Salas is doing a lot of great things with a lot of, you know, a lot of fighters. So, and Mendoza's confidence is at an all-time high. Breadman even, you know, mentioned that after the fight. It's like the difference a fighter, you know, has, you know, with their confidence, that's, you know, they become a completely different fighter. And that's what we're seeing with Ryan Mendoza. But that said, like, if his head is right and he does want a rematch, I don't have any reason to believe that he couldn't correct that flaw. He's not going to change his way. He's not going to fight like a 6'6 guy in his next fight. He's going to be who he is. He's just going to, you know, do his damnedest to not get caught by that same shot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you really can't change at this point, but he does not take advantage of his physical tools. And if Mendoza can catch him with that kind of shot, and I'm with you, give him credit. This is a guy that tries to the very end, like, does not get discouraged by anything. That's what I've noticed of him in the last few fights that I've seen him. He had lost 2 out of 3 before going on this 3-fight winning streak, lost to Larry Gomez, whoever that is, and then Jesus Ramos. You know, before getting back into the mix, beats Benjamin Whitaker and then retires Jason Rosario. And now here we are with Fedora. What I've seen from Mendoza, is that he just is nonstop, man. Like, he'll just keep coming at you. He's got such an active motor and he's got a pretty good chin that he can afford to do that. So I am interested in the rematch. You know, it kind of gives Fedora a compelling opponent to face before the end of the year. They can sell it as a Showtime main event once again. There really wasn't a lot of buzz for this fight going into it. I mean, it almost felt like the people involved were kind of ignoring it. Like, I didn't get too many calls about, you know, having people on about it, and I didn't know much about it till like fight week, effectively. And it did have competition with Shakur and Bam and some bigger names that were out there. But man, a rematch would be interesting, that's for sure. And we'll see if this has any lasting effects. But shout out to Mendoza, man. Like, you use the phrase resurrecting his career. It's exactly what he's done. Kind of coming back.
On Easter weekend, no less. Yeah.
Hey, there you go. That's what I like. A little synergy with the days in the calendar. I like that. All right, let's look ahead to this weekend. The big show this weekend's over in the UK. You've got Joe Joyce, interim title holder at heavyweight, Zhe Li Zhang, a heavyweight contender coming off a very competitive loss to Filip Hrgović in his last fight. That's what I quite frankly thought that Zhang won. I'm pretty excited about this fight, Jake. Yep. Like, you got two big, big guys, you know, 6'5", 6'6", two big punchers, two guys with pretty good chins. In Joyce's case, a great chin. I think Zhang's got a really good chin as well. And I can tell you, being around Zhang, some of the biggest hands I've ever seen, like massive hands. So I favor Joyce in this fight because I think Joyce's skill level is higher, but he might have to dig deeper than he's ever had before to beat Zhe Li Zhang. For as long as Zhang's in it, he isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm going back to Jim Gray asking Fandora, you know, do you regret taking this fight? It's like, I'm looking at the risks Joe Joyce is willing to take while he's guaranteed a title shot. I mean, he, you know, Joseph Parker, we expect him to beat him, but there's a lot easier test than Joseph Parker for a guy, you know, who hasn't fought at that level to, you know, to face. And so give Joyce credit for that. Now he's fighting Zhang, and like, I'm with you. I thought he beat Hrgović by the same scores that they gave to Hrgović. So, I mean, he should have been the mandatory challenger. Joyce, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes ahead and says, you know what, well, if I'm not getting my title shot after this, I'll go fight Hrgović. He just has that mentality. So this is absolutely everything you want in a heavyweight contender, a guy who's willing to earn his title shot. So I know there's been a lot of talk that if slash when he wins this fight, and I'm with you, it'll be a tough fight. I do expect him to prevail. There's talk maybe he gets Tyson Fury next. So I don't, you know, Fury says a lot of things that might just be something he's saying but not quite willing to do. But yeah, I love the fact that Joyce is not willing to sit on his lead.
Yeah, the thing people have to remember about Joyce, too, is that he was a 2016 Olympian, but he's older, right? He's in his late 30s at this point, and the clock's ticking. And the way that the heavyweight rotation is going right now for the Usyk belts, he's, what, third in line at this point behind Daniel Dubois, which I know irritates Joe Joyce to no end, and behind Hrgović, the IBF contender. And then he might have to contend with the, you know, possibility that we get Usyk versus Fury at some point before the end of the year. So taking big fights, taking high profile fights, got a little trinket around his waist with that interim, you know, WBO belt. And I'm sure there's some money in the Zhang fight. There'll be some money in the Hrgović fight for him. It's only going to build his profile, you know, for bigger fights down the line. But I think we'll learn something about Joyce in this one.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's fought anybody like Zhang. Like Zhang, if you just look at that resume and you see the draw with Jerry Forrest, that was a weird situation in Florida during the pandemic where Zhang, I believe he told me that week he had like one glass of water the entire week. Like it was just weird health situation for him down there. He is more the guy that, you know, took Hrgović to hell and really humanized Hrgović. Hrgović before that fight was kind of the boogeyman at heavyweight that nobody wanted to fight. All of a sudden, Zhe Li Zhang has got him, you know, gassed out in the 10th round and, you know, could have won that fight on the scorecards. I think this, you know, I look at Joyce's resume, it's pretty good, including Joseph Parker, but I think this will be the toughest opponent of Joyce's career.
No, I agree with you. And this is a case where, you know, big guys should fight like big guys. You know, you mentioned Fandora is 6'6". You should fight like a 6'6", you know, junior middleweight, not a 5'6" junior, but these are big heavyweights who you want to see fight like big heavyweights. So it only adds to the appeal for both of them. And I agree. It's like, I mean, I love John's confidence, even creeping up into the gym when Joe Joyce is training out in Vegas. So just same thing with Hrgović. He kind of, you know, everyone talked about Hrgović was the boogeyman, but Zhang all along was the one that raised his hand. He's like, when they get to me, I am absolutely going to take that fight. And it was almost like he called his bluff and Hrgović had to take it. And here, you know, Joyce was looking for an opponent. Zhang was the first one to raise his hand. So, I expect Joe Joyce to be tested. I expect him to pass that test with flying colors, though, in the end.
Yeah, good fight, good main event this weekend over in the UK. The co-main event is pretty good as well. Yep. You've got Michaela Mayer back in action, 135 pounds, her debut at this new weight class, her first fight since her loss and her title defeat to Alicia Baumgartner, facing, interestingly, the only woman to beat Alicia Baumgartner, Christina Lindartu. I think this is another kind of competitive, interesting fight. Lindartu's been a little inactive in recent years, but... You know, Michaela Mayer is not stepping into a easy tune-up, I don't think, at 135. Right. I think she should win, but I don't think it's going to be the easiest fight in the world for her because Christina is physical. She's a physical, physical fighter who I think is going to make it physical in this fight. But I think the question, Jake, I have is, like, I talked to a lot of people about this in women's boxing. Like, there's obviously interest amongst boxing fans in a rematch between Michaela Mayer and Alicia Baumgartner. The response I always get, and I'm sure you get the same thing when you ask about it, is like, who's going to pay for it? Like, that was a $1 million fight last year. And as talented as these two women are, I don't get the sense that Eddie Hearn is going to be running to put that fight on a DAZN Matchroom card. I certainly don't get the sense that Top Rank is eager to put that fight on as a Top Rank ESPN card. Right. I don't know what has to happen. Maybe, you know, they have to both get titles at 135 after Katie Taylor retires or something up to that effect. But, you know, that may be one of those fights that we think, you know, is a good rematch and should happen, but we don't get, at least not in the foreseeable future. What do you think?
So I actually just spoke to Michaela a few days ago. I always make a point to interview her before all her fights. She was adamant. I asked her, I said, is there any situation where would a rematch with Alicia or even Amanda Serrano moving up to 130 where you can drop back? She's like, I am absolutely done with 130. She's like, I don't care if the rematch with Alicia now all of a sudden comes about. She's done with 130. She likes the way she feels in this training camp at 135. And her exact, you know, she wants to see how it translates into the ring. But this is why she took this fight, because she's fighting Leonardo too. Interim titles can be a blessing and a curse. In this case, I think it is a blessing because the interim WBO title is at stake. That, in theory, should guarantee her the winner. Well, should guarantee her a shot at Katie Taylor, because even if Katie loses to Chantel Cameron, she's still the undisputed lightweight champion. She wants that shot at Katie. We've seen it. Katie doesn't duck anybody. So I'm pretty sure that fight would happen at some point. And that's kind of where I'm going with this. I kind of feel like one of them is going to have to win a title at 135 in order to create intrigue for that rematch. Now, if Michaela Mayer beats Leonardo this weekend, gets Katie Taylor after Katie fights Chantel Cameron, and if the Amanda Serrano rematch doesn't happen, wins a title there, all of a sudden that rematch becomes a lot more lucrative. Now someone's going to absolutely, you know, want to pay for that rematch. So I do believe we will get it in some future. I've been saying it's the best rivalry in the sport. I know, like, Sinisi and Yocasta Valle got, you know, their little thing going, but these two just, they'll never like each other. I thought that was going to be the case with Benavidez and Blant. They wound up hugging it out. They respected each other and deservedly, you know, great. They fought it out and now they like each other. These two will absolutely never like each other. This rivalry will always be there. I'm not going to say they're both unbeatable, you know, because obviously they both have a loss. Their fight was razor thin. You kind of want to see a better fight. The first one, like, the builder was fantastic. You know, there was going to be no letdown, but then in the ring, it was like, it wasn't quite, you know, I don't think the fight lived up to standards. It was a highly skilled fight, but it wasn't, you know, like the type of grudge match we expect to see translate in the ring. I do believe we will get something like that in a part two, but it'll be at 135.
Yeah, I do agree with you that there needs to be a title. There needs to be probably at least two more wins for the both of them to get him there. I think that Baumgartner is likely to fight Erica Cruz. That was the buzz I was hearing over the last week. Erica Cruz, of course, was competitive in her loss to Amanda Serrano at 126. She could move up to 130 and fight Baumgartner there. And then you see where the dust settles on Katie Taylor in the fall. I know there are some tentative plans to make the Serrano fight in October, November with Katie Taylor, but that's one of those things where until I see it, you know, ink dry on paper and, you know, a press release and both women in the same room, I'm not so sure I'm going to believe that rematch happens this year until I see that. So we'll see what happens. And look, by virtue of management and promotion, Alicia Baumgartner is probably next in line to fight Katie Taylor because they're both represented by Brian Peters. They're both represented by Room. That's a very easy fight to put together at 135. So, you know, Mayer's right now at 135, but Baumgartner might be next in line, title, interim title or no title, for that that next matchup. But look, I'm with you. I want to see that fight happen sooner rather than later. Those two do hate each other and they will never, ever, ever reconcile, no matter how many times they actually fight. A couple things, quick things before I let you go. There was some reporting out there a couple of weeks ago about Spence Crawford being close. You probably heard the same things I did, that it's not, they're not there yet. June is not going to happen. I should stop letting myself become kind of, you know, Charlie Brown with Lucy on this thing. But you know, we've got Alexis Rocha, who was the WBO mandatory, moving on. He's going to fight Anthony Young on May 27th. I said this last week. Rocha is under the impression that Spence is going to fight Crawford next. But again, until we get these guys signed, you just can't believe it. So, you know, what do you think? What's your gut on this one when it comes to Spence and Crawford? Because we still don't have Keith Thurman, Errol Spence announced. And that fight was supposed to be in May. And we're recording this on April 11th. You know, if you're going to have that fight, you better announce it rather quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will rewind a little bit. When Rocha announced that he was going to move on, that was like, okay, maybe now there is something to spend. We knew Spencer Crawford were talking. I thought maybe they were just talking, okay, we're going to do these fights next, and then maybe, you know, meet each other later and just kind of get that out of the way so they don't drag out negotiations. Once Roach decided he was moving on, I said, all right, maybe there's a shot. So you mentioned Roach is convinced that they're fighting next. The WBO is convinced that they're fighting next. The WBC seems to believe that they're fighting next. The people who are actually involved in the event don't seem to believe that they're at least not fighting June 17th, as reported. So I think it's a shame. It's kind of being handled worse than it was last year. Because last
year
we got
to possible. How is that possible? Exactly. That was as bungled as you can make it last year. That was right. Hedge funds, and let's do an Instagram live. Let's tweet each other. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. So last year, I mean, it got to the point, I think we finally believed, oh my God, this is actually going to happen. Once it didn't happen, I was like back to being checked out with it. Because prior to 2022, I never believed they were going to fight each other at welterweight. Then they got to that point. I said, all right, we're finally going to get it. Once it fell apart, I said, okay, I'm done with it. I'm not getting Charlie Brown in this one. I'm still not there yet. A part of me still doesn't want to believe that it will happen. Because I'm seeing all the steps the WBC has taken. So they ordered Ugas and Mario Barrios to fight for an interim title. So if Spence is in fact going to fight Terrence Crawford next, where does that leave Keith Thurman? Now, granted, I know he only has one win in however long was it, 3-4 years. So you could argue, oh, he doesn't deserve the shot. But according to the sanctioned bodies, he's the mandatory challenger. The WBC named that fight last November. They were supposed to fight. It got to the point where Thurman was told, well, you know, if you want this fight, it's not going to happen at 147. His exact words, I'm aware of what's going on and I am on board. I don't care. I just want the fight. With Spence, Spence is not afraid of anybody. Let's put that right out there. I just feel like he doesn't want to give Keith Thurman that payday. He just doesn't like him. He doesn't want to make money off him. I think that's the only holdup in that fight. Right. But with this Crawford thing, they're not going to make the same mistake because last year they had a bunch of people on hold. They were expecting that fight to happen and a bunch of, you know, they wound up going the rest of 22. A lot of guys only fought once last year, guys that were supposed to fight in that November, December timeframe. Those fights didn't happen. They can't do that again. So they have to keep the line moving. So I do believe that Spence Thurman is the contingency plan at this point. And the shame of it is when they said, once we were all of the belief that the fight was never going to happen, Spence Crawford, Spence Thurman was, look, it's not a desirable pay-per-view, but it's not a bad alternative. It's like, okay, you know, it's kind of unfinished business. And then Spence goes and does whatever he wants. Now that we're back to believing Spence Crawford could happen and that if it doesn't, now he's back to fighting it. Now all of a sudden a Keith Thurman fight is in an entirely different light. I don't think it's that bad of a fight, but people just aren't going to react well to it. And I'm still stuck with if Crawford doesn't fight Spence Lex, who is he fighting? Because he's not fighting Rocha. That was mandatory. And Rocha is still going to be the mandatory as long as he beats Anthony Young. And he's not going to get away with fighting someone like Blair Cobbs. I certainly hope that's not next.
No, and you know, I speculate, like, could he fight Virgil Ortiz? You know, I mean, he could, but I do think from everything I was hearing, we're going to get Virgil rescheduled in July, maybe.
Yes. That's exactly
against Danny Onis. So that seems to be on, you know, on paper, penciled anyway. And it comes back to the same debate we had before, Jake, like who does Crawford work with? Like, he's obviously not going to work with PBC. He's not going to work with Top Rank. Golden Boy is kind of the only game in town. Matchroom's got nothing unless you want like a B level. I mean, you want to go to fight Conor Benn? I mean, I guess, but that's probably not going to happen. He's low on options at this point. And we could be back to Bud Crawford once a year guy. There. So, I mean, do you think that, I mean, with Spence Thurman, like, is May still on the table in your mind?
No, absolutely not. I would think Juneteenth weekend. Okay. We'd see that fight. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's, again, not a bad consolation prize. Yeah. I think there's, again, blood feud there. Like, Spence hates Thurman with the fire of 1,000 suns, and all because Thurman kind of dismissed him years ago as a future opponent. So, not bad, but. Yeah.
We'll the only thing I will say on that is if the rumors are true, then supposedly by next weekend at the Tank, you know, Ryan Garcia fight, we should get clarification, if not a full blown announcement on who.
We fell
Spencer's
for that
fight.
Once before too.
I agree with you.
Some of that stuff before. It's again. Like, don't Lucy me. Don't Charlie Brown me on this one. Last thing for you, Anthony Joshua, and I wish he had done this a couple of days prior when Matchroom was in the U.S. and you and I were both there to ask about it. But he goes on Instagram on Monday. And he announces that his next fight will be in December, which flies in the face of everything we thought we knew about the schedule of Anthony Joshua. Even on this show last week, Eddie Hearn said, we want to bring him back in July. Yep. He named Dillian White as the most likely opponent. And now AJ's out there saying, I'm coming back in December. Now, one of the first things I thought was, is the Middle East all of a sudden in play is there money for a Fury fight sometime in December? But that was strange to see AJ, you know, after all the talk about keeping him active, right? Of not being a once or even a twice a year fighter. To wait till December. What did you make
of that? So I'm with you right there. The only thing I can think of is maybe they realized, okay, getting AJ in the ring three times in a calendar year is very expensive. It was, like you said, a very cryptic quote. And again, if we believe everything we read on Twitter, all of a sudden he failed this mysterious drug test that nobody knows about. So that's the reason why. I know. I just wanted to get that out there. One thing I did find interesting. So, and I'm with you. I spoke with Eddie. The first story I was going to write once I got off the plane was, you know, that AJ is going to return in July. Dillian White is back to being a front runner, attractive rematch. And that Eddie has also been in talks with Bob Arum, you know, because they were trying to negotiate the better be of Callum Smith fight. And obviously, when you talk to Bob Arum and you are Eddie Hearn, a topic that's going to come up is Anthony Joshua fighting Tyson Fury. So if they're going to bench him until the rest of the year, it has to be something big. It can't be. They're not going to keep him out of the ring for 8 months to fight Otto Wallin. Look, Otto Wallin would have been a fine option for July as well. And his name was kind of floated. But they're not going to keep him, you know, benched for something on that level. So I am thinking that maybe he's a backup, not a backup plan, but, you know, if we don't get Fury Usyk and Fury is still champion by the fourth quarter of 2023, that's a fight we will finally see. Another Charlie Brown football moment. I know. But that's something like that is the only thing that makes sense. Otherwise, it's like, yeah, why is he's not going to need all that time in the gym to gel with Derek James. The best way you gel with Derek James is you do another training camp. You get back in the ring in July. Exactly.
So. Yeah, he needs to fight. I wouldn't give him much of a chance against Fury right now anyway. But like if he goes out and looks great against Dillian White, not only would that help his skills, but his confidence. Yeah. Going into the next fight. That's a very weird situation to see him, you know, decide to take it off. I hope it turns out to be mistaken. It does get back against Dillian White, because not only would it help AJ, it helped the promotion of that fight. It would get even bigger. Like Dillian White, I think we both agree, has got very little left at this point as a top heavyweight, but yeah, you know, still a name. It would still do a good crowd in the UK, Wembley, wherever. And it would be good for everyone involved. But
They got history. That's the most attractive, you know, I don't want to, you know, minimize Dillian White as a stay busy fight. But on that level, that's the most attractive, you know, keep busy fight for AJ that you can think of.
The plan made sense. Franklin, White, and then a big fight at the end of the year, whether it's Fury or Deontay Wilder. This one, I can't really wrap my head around exactly what's going on within AJ's camp. Jake, appreciate your time, man. Follow Jake on Twitter. Read all his stuff over on boxingscene.com. One of the most plugged in guys in the entire business. Always appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure being on the show.
And when we come back, my conversation with Jarrell Miller.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up. Picks in all the sports, football, basketball. We do them all. But here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay. So you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah. Like, check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Jarrell Miller is an undefeated heavyweight. He is coming off a win over Lucas Brown earlier this month. He's attempted to get back into the heavyweight title picture nearly 4 years after he was forced out of a fight with Anthony Joshua after failing multiple drug tests. Jarrell is back, and he joins me here on the show. Jarrell, you made an announcement recently on social media that after maintaining what has been kind of a relatively low profile the last couple of years, you were officially doing media interviews again. Why did you say that?
Because people have been reaching out to me for the last few years to do interviews and podcasts, and I didn't really have nothing to say. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, people don't have the right information, you know, and if you don't get ahead of certain things in the media, a picture's already painted of you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I wasn't fortunate enough to have the promoters that I was with to step up and try to clear my name. And, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, to say that there's evidence to clear me, they don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? So at that point, I was like, you know what? It is what it is. I'm just going to take it on the chin. I can say a lot of people's names. I can call out doctors. I can call out lawyers. But it didn't make any sense at this point. You know, I'm trying to say that the media already have what they feel like is the evidence. They already made their assumption of who I am at some point. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Man, I'm from Brooklyn, man. I take it on the chin. I bounce back. And I'm going to handle everybody's ass when I get back. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, after I left boxing, I had to deal with some personal issues. It only got worse. You know what I mean? In my personal life. So I had to deal with that. So even we could have probably came back even a year sooner, to tell you the truth. But this dealing with the stupid promoters, you know, I had a problem with Demetrius Salida. He's flip-flopped with certain things he does. You know, it's a constant battle, you know, besides even getting in the ring. You know, and that's what I'm working on with my team, is coming out with my own educational program on the fight game. You know what I mean? Because I've negotiated my fight with AJ. My fight AJ was a guaranteed $10 million my first fight. The next fight was a guaranteed $17 million plus pay-per-view buys. I negotiated all that shit on my own, really, with the help of my manager at the time. So I understand this game to a T. And just unfortunately, I was locked into a contract from 10 years ago with Slater Promotions. And he's not the worst promoter, but sometimes the promoters do things best for themselves and not for the fighter. You know what I'm trying to say? So I've learned a lot in the last few years now where it's like, I know what I got to do. I know where I'm at. My age says 34, but I'm really 33. So end of the day, I know what I got to do, brother. And that's what we're going to do.
What would you say is the most significant thing that has been said or written about you that you disagree with?
That it was steroids. You know what I mean? Trying to say, or what it was. When you dig into the fact that you start really studying these stuff, a lot of people don't understand that. Like, even what I fell for was never on Vada's banned list that year. It came with a banned list the next year. So I'm like, first of all, even if I was looking at the back of a canister and I'm looking for something to cross label, make sure it's not on the list, it wasn't even on the damn list. So how can you fail something on the list that you gave me? You know what I'm trying to say? And I tell people all the time, when you look between the lines, a lot of people weren't feeling for a long time with Vada. They got to constantly update these lists to find something to catch guys with. And then there's no clear picture of updating guys on, yo, this is banned. They'll add stuff on the list and you'll never know it's on the list. So how you know 1 month is on the list and next month is not? Or it's on the list, not 1 month, next month it is. So it's a lot of unclarity when it comes to drug testing. You know, even Dana White said he's tired of you citing the nonsense. It's a game. It's politics everywhere you go once you understand the sport and you understand it, when money's involved. there's gonna be some red tape that you have to cut through. So there's fighters. Because fighters, we worry about fighting. We have to worry about managers fucking us, we worry about promoters fucking us. Now we gotta worry about Vada fucking us. Now you started fucking us. It's a lot of red tape going through and people don't do their homework. And that's why the point I was like, you know what? I'm gonna be me at the end of the day, regardless. And if people don't want to do their own homework, and Eddie Hearn was the quickest person to jump out, he do this, he do that. If he didn't work with Canelo Alvarez, he steroids. I never remember if people study with it, I never got COVID steroids. It was a bad substance, yes. It's not steroids. I ain't stick none in my ass.
Well, I think Jarrell, one, you know, I assume you're talking about the substance before the Forrest fight, but HGH and EPO, which was on before the Joshua fight, those are banned. Those have been banned for a long time.
Those have been banned for a long time. But if you understand my drug system, what was in my labs, my levels were dumb low. I never had it. It was I passed, and I failed, and I passed. And I sent in the documentation I got from a doctor because Eddie Hearn knew I was going to have surgery on my elbow after the Bogondinho fight. I canceled my surgery on my elbow to prepare for the fight with AJ. My right elbow was so swollen and fucked up, I find any way to deal with it. A lot of people don't know this. EPO heals bone and growth spurts in your elbow. It can actually heal. It's a healing agent. It's not just used for cardiovascular properties. AGH, same thing. It helps with healing properties. I took a super strong stem cell shot from a doctor providing documents. How can I pass and fail? I took 3 tests in like 1 week practically with that. I passed, failed, and passed. And people don't understand this. I'm the one that asked to test me again. When GW1516, known as Cardamine, came up, I said, what the fuck is this shit? I never had it in my life. I might test me again. They were closing the book already. They test me again, and that came up. So I'm the one that blew the food on my dance up, but nobody explains that. Even Bob Arum, when what happened again with Bob Arum, Bob was like, listen, I see the truth now, and I'm sorry how things came out to be. Get yourself together, and we'll get back together. Even Bob Arum came back and apologized to me over the phone. But Eddie Hearn, who worked with Carlos Molina, Canelo, Dylan White, who else? Man, let's go fucking on. Ben Hinn, what's his name? God ain't Ben. And those are actual real steroids. But the problem is, those are his guys. So he's going to jump in front of the media, pay who he got to pay off to make himself look good. I get it. Understand that. You know what I'm trying to say? But when you're a black guy from America, you're from Brooklyn, you choke shit, they're going to hush you. Especially I'm educated to this game. You know what I'm trying to say? But at a certain point, it don't make no sense. You keep yelling and talking. Like, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm a real person. I'm real. I've always been real to the core. Anybody that know me, know I'm real. So for me to sit here and argue, I'm like, yo, man, what? Everybody kiss my ass. I'll see you in a couple of years. Fuck it.
I think Jarrell, one thing I would say is at best, you have been kind of reckless with not knowing what you're putting in your body, right? Like, I think that's fair to say. You're not, at the very least, you're not taking the kind of precautions as a professional fighter that you need to take to make sure you know exactly what's going in your system. Has that changed? Has your process changed?
Oh, most definitely, but you gotta understand something too. When you're an up and coming fighter, it costs money for these drug testers. Who pays for the promoter? They don't tell you, hey, we can test your supplements. Each supplement you're gonna test is gonna test you $600 for your supplement. I spent over 10 grand testing my supplements, nothing came up. So I did my due diligence. So you can't say I didn't do my due diligence. I was negligent. I was not negligent. The problem is there's not enough educational things there to help the fighter. They're always about is money. I need 10 grand. What fighter is going to take 10 grand to go take testing supplements out or 5 grand every fight to supplements out when you want to try something new? You know what I'm saying? Now, on top of that, on your list, you don't have supplements clearly outwritten that's updated and there's no formal way of getting it out to a fighter. You know what I'm trying to say? So don't say I didn't do my loot. I did do my loot. I paid a lot of money to get my supplements tested. The problem is when you're thinking of supplements, you're thinking of over-the-counter GNC. There's a lot of things. Too much coffee in the Olympics get you fucked up. You could take a Viagra or a Cialis that get you fucked up. So there's a lot of not clear tape cut stuff there to help fighters get educated. And the promoters are not doing that due diligence. You know what I'm trying to manage? A lot of managers are not doing the due diligence. It's all left to the fighter. Okay, cool. I understand that. But you got to understand these levels, these nanograms. You're going to nanogram levels. What the fuck is nanogram levels? HGH was in my system for nanogram levels. What the fuck 0.1 nanogram is? Do you know what that is?
No, but I would ask you this.
Oh, hold on.
I agree. Look, no, I agree. Jarrell, hold on. I agree.
I
agree with you.
I'm not getting mad at you.
I agree with
you. You don't even know.
But I'm not fighting.
I'm just saying, you don't even know. I'm not mad at you. I'm gonna say no. You don't even know what a nanogram level is, but you're saying I do my due diligence.
I'm not talking about the GNC stuff. I'm not talking about the supplement stuff. But I mean, look, if you're gonna get a stem cell treatment injected into your arm, maybe that requires a little extra due diligence. If you're going to take what you said was a sexual enhancement drug, maybe that requires extra due diligence.
Correct. Like I said, I checked it back in the thing. I ain't think the little $10 pill was gonna cost me $20-30 million, brother.
Couple other things for you. Get a big fight, you are going to have to work with a major promoter. You and Eddie Hearn are obviously not on good terms. You praise Bob Arum, but some people at Top Rank that I've talked to have said, Jarrell Miller owes us money. We don't want to work with him until we get our money back. Can you work with, can you get the fights you want without these major promoters?
It's so funny because Bob Arum and them guys, it's like, I'm going to tell you something. You're only as good as yesterday's fight. Bob Arum and them guys know I owe them money, but they know how to get their money back. So I don't know why they're going to say that for. You want to get money back? I fight my little brother, the fake big baby. And when I smash him, y'all get your money back from that fight if that's what you want to do. But people talk, and they're making it seem like I'm the bad guy. There's ways of getting their money back. But that's if they want to take the risk. If they want to put the money where their mouth is at. Like I said, there's a lot of other promoters out there, like I've been talking to, you know, Oscar, PBC, you know, Floyd, some guys in Qatar. You know what I mean? The thing about it is right now, the playing field's still open for the heavyweights. The heavyweights got to step up and say who they want to fight. You know, AJ says he's about the money now, supposedly what I'm hearing. If AJ, he's about the money, he wants to fight certain names. Okay, fine. There's only three people AJ can fight that's going to bring in triple-figure numbers that anybody cares about. That's Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, and Big Baby. There's no other fight out there for him that's going to bring in big money that nobody gives a shit about. Nobody gets about Franklin. Nobody gets about Dylan White and him. Nobody gets about Chisora. You know what I'm trying to say? He's not going to get a Tyson Fury fight right now, I don't think. He's sure as hell ain't going to fight Deontay and get his head knocked the fuck off. The only fight that you can probably say, it's 50-50, is me and him. But I know me in my heart, I'm going to run his ass over. You know what I'm trying to say? So like I said, there's a lot of opportunities out there. It's just right now for me, is I owe Demetrius Salida two more fights. He's not a big promoter, you know. Me and him have not seen eye to eye over the years. We're cordial now, yes, we're cool. But once I get these two fights of the way with him, then I'm maneuvering do what I need to do in my career.
Last thing for you. You have never been concerned about weight in your career, but you were in the 280s when you were fighting on HBO against Marius Wach. Mm-hmm. Right around 325, 330 during your fights for Eddie Hearn. You've weighed considerably more, probably 15, 16 pounds more in your last three or four fights. Do you feel like you're in the kind of shape to beat a top-level guy?
Nah, fuck no. I wouldn't lie to you. I'm a realist. Nah. We got to go to training camp for another 3 months. I'll never sit here and lie to you. But like I said before, this was my first training camp that I had in years. So I came down from like 350. I got down to 318. I got really sick. Wasn't feeling well. And I went back up to 327. But flying to Dubai, the jet lag, I went in 330. And I told myself, I says, after this fight, we got to get everything locked in order. We got to put everything and put towards 100% training. And a couple of my people said the same exact thing. We got to lock in this time now. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to get everything in order and we're going to get in place. Like I said before, I beat a smaller heavyweight, who's really one of the bigger heavyweights at 280. You know, I punched them out, gunned them. But in this fight, it was more, even when I went in the ring, you know, I boxed the first round. But after that, I just had so much frustration. I said, oh, fuck that. I'm just going to swing. I just want to swing this fight. So technically, it went out the window, this fight. If you see any one of my fights, it's much more technical than that. I'm like, nah, I just want to swing. So this fight was like, let the frustration out, get out the energy, get out the way, and next fight we get back to the drawing board. That's what I did. I said, fuck that. This fight, I'm coming out swinging. Big Baby just want to come out swinging this fight. That's how I felt. So I know now, time to get realistic now. I can't box like that, boxing other guys. Of course not. I mean, I'm not that kind of guy. So go back to boxing. We'll get 30, 40 pounds off. Now listen, I'm smashing every fucking body. Trust me when I say this.
Well, Jarrell, you certainly can talk the talk. I'm looking forward to seeing you back into the mix.
Yo, hold on. I can talk the talk, and I back it up. Don't say that.
I know. I'm looking forward to seeing that down the line, man. Good to talk to you, man. Keep up the good work.
All right, Chris. No problem.
Take care. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Jake Donovan and Jarrell Miller for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyer's.com today.